Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? This is Wardell Potts Jr. listening to Solar Records Radio, and today we have a show for you. And so later in the show, on the second half of the show, Charmaine Silvers from the Silvers will be here. That's why you heard that song Hotline. And don't forget, later on in the show, Charmaine Silvers will be coming up and being a blessing to us, sharing those stories, the stories behind the stories. And we love it, and we appreciate it very, very much. But before that even happens, you know, we have my brother Phoenix here, and we're going to chop it up and see what's going on. Phoenix, how you been, man? Everything good for you?
Oh, everything is squeaky clean and beautiful, my brother.
Squeaky clean and beautiful. That's what
absolutely.
I want to hear. Amen.
Absolutely.
Amen. So, much love, man. Much love. We usually chop it up on Tuesdays, but here we are on Throwback Thursday because we like to mix it up a little bit. So we're definitely going to mix it up, and it's nice to hear your voice. How's the weather out there where you are?
Oh, beautiful, man. I think the other day it got up in the 90s. I didn't check it today, but, man, we've been having some incredible weather. But all weather, whether it's raining or shining, like my dad said, if you're topsoil, it's good weather.
Amen. 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 All right. So we're going to mix it up. We're going to talk a little bit. We're going to play some old school music. We're going to keep taking y'all back and just having a good time. And but, you know, Phoenix, you know, we were talking a little earlier about forgiveness. And so what is it that you wanted to share about forgiveness, my brother?
You know, if forgiveness could be, I guess, categorized in some instances as emotional baggage, when we carry a feeling about someone that we can't let go, it's like an extra weight in our backpack emotionally, and it can weigh us down. And I find it so liberating as a person who has lived a little bit on the planet, and I've raised 3 grown children and 5 grandchildren, that the act of letting go, which is the essence of forgiveness, can be liberating at times. And there's other sides, as we'll discuss, to the coin. But from a personal vantage point, I find that in the past, I held on to certain things. Even parental guidance, specifically from my dad, being a hardcore professor, it was very difficult living under his tutelage. You know, I remember in one instance he told me, I came home so excited, I ran as fast as my legs could carry. Hey, Dad, I got 100. He said, that's all? You mean you didn't get extra credit? Did you apply? Did you even try?
Wow.
He was a tough cookie. He was a tough cookie, but in latter years, actually, the last day I got a chance to talk to him, because he was under a trach from that point forward until his demise, he told me that. He said, I prepared you for this world. You know, nobody had a greater vested interest in you than me as your father. And he expressed his love. And we both cried a million tears, and we forgave each other. And I realized that he made, you know, they say it takes a lot of pressure to build a diamond. He made a diamond out of me, and I'm forever in his debt. And so that's just a shiny example in a personal directive that I personally took to forgive the man that I come from his loins. And I'm sure there's greater and lesser experiences, but in some aspects, in some monumental aspects, forgiveness can be such a liberating perspective if you accept the challenge. And as I mentioned, you know, you and I talked in advance, we're going to look at the other side of midnight with that and some of the things, precautionary measures that we can take, but it's all in the benefit of our listeners to derive any little thing that they can take away and use in a positive way in their lives is really, I think, Mr. Wardell and myself, our objective to bring forth these thought-provoking discussions in order to unearth maybe deep-seated feelings that we may be carrying and just kind of help us to sort through it, not necessarily challenge or convey or change, but sort through our feelings and come out on the other side better people. That's the objective.
You know, it's really important for me to talk about this because there's so much undercurrent that happens with not being forgiving, and it can cause you to stumble, and not only can it cause you to stumble, but the reason why you stumble is because it's consuming you, and all the energy, all the energy that it takes to hold on to that is a waste of good energy. You simply have to know that when you're trying to punish someone by not forgiving them, you end up hurting yourself even more. And you know, I can understand there's people that have hurt me in my life, and you know, and I still think about it, and I always go, but why? Why would they, you know, why? Why did you know? But sometimes, you know, we'll never get the answer. We'll never get the answer to that why. And so, you know, you just kind of like stuck. I mean, some people will get the answer from that person, but a lot of us won't because we won't even talk to that person. So, you know, or we've moved on and we're someplace else. But when we think back, we go, why? Why would he even, or she, why would she even, you know, whatever the case is, why would they even do that? You know, why would they attempt to hurt me? So we won't get the answer. So that's why we have to, I believe, be wise enough, you know, to just say, you know what, enough's enough. I'm going to let this go because it's causing me to have issues. Look what happened with Will Smith. I mean, he was holding on to stuff. And that slap came from way more than just the one joke about her hair that wasn't even that bad. That's why people kept saying, but wait, it was just a G.I. Jane joke. It was not that big of a joke. And, you know, so I don't understand. But see, when you hold stuff in, when you allow yourself to be consumed by, you know, unforgiveness or whatever it is, it causes you to fail, stumble, causes you to be frustrated and angry, and it consumes you. And it really is stealing, it's taking away from who you really are and who you really want to be. And that's why you see Will Smith saying, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I really screwed up. I should not have done that with it. You know, and I can't imagine the regret. Because I've been there before where I've done something spontaneously and I was so embarrassed. It's hard to get, I mean, he's got the whole world that he's trying to say, I'm sorry to, you know, I mean, when
he, and you know what you said, and you know what, Wardell, just to pause a sec, is that you said something that was really unearthing, something very important that just cannot allow to slip away into, oblivion. Yeah, you mentioned that you may never get the answers. And sometimes, you know, there's an expression people say, perception is everything. And many times when you're on the receiving end of what you feel from your perceptive angle that you've been wrong and you feel that you cannot forgive, you may not know the other side of the coin. And if you don't forgive, you shut the door to the answers to the question that you already always wanted to know. Why? And I, as you mentioned eloquently, you know what? It was a knee-jerk response or something happened. I didn't really think it through. I just kind of said something and I didn't really mean it. But if you are not allowing the other person forgiveness, you're not going to know the answer to the riddle, because you shut the door to understanding. And understanding is such a beautiful door to walk through, to walk on the other side of it. Some psychologists call it closure. You know, like in my case, my dad, why did you treat me so harshly as a kid? Why did you put these insurmountable, you know, obstacles in front of me that I couldn't hurdle over? And he said, son, I've prepared you for this world. And I know once you graduated from your dad high, there's nothing that you couldn't overcome. And you know what? He was right. You know, my sister, who happens to be a psychologist, she told me one day, and we're not the best of siblings. We don't really communicate much. She's not a spiritual person, and that's not the defining factor. She has some issues that it's difficult for me to get past in family matters, personal. But one of the things she said to me, she says, you know, brother, dad could never break you. You always was an upbeat kind of spirit. And she said, I've often admired that about you. And I thought about that deeply. I said, you know, she was right. Dad was making a diamond out of me. And I don't care what people say or do. I happen to have had a very sweet mother. Let me put her in there. She was an amazing mom, the most beautiful mom you could think of, personality-wise. So she was the other side of midnight. But I came out of it a strong person. I am a forgiving person. I've been accused of being an incurable romantic. I'm a songwriter, so I love writing about love. I love watching chick flicks. I mean, I'm not your atypical man,
yeah,
even though
you
I'm
got
called
that one.
Alpha. But I love it. I really do. I love being me, because everyone else is already taken. And so to forgive is opening the door, like you said, Wardell, to understand the question, why? Because sometimes it's not what your perception has dictated. That person might have had a perfectly good reason why they fell off the rails for a half a sec. And when you forgive them, wow, it's so liberating.
Yes.
Because now you no longer, like you said, you're no longer carrying that emotional baggage. It's not weighing you down. It's not consuming you, like you said. And when you said consuming, I thought of a fire. You know, when you throw something in a fire and it's consumed by fire, that's a done deal. There's some coming back from that.
Yeah,
so let's not be victims.
Bad.
Yeah, that's not a good outcome.
Don Fleming's in the house. What's up, Don? He was in the house.
I'm good. No, I'm good. I'm good. I had to mute myself because I'm on the road, but I'm good.
Okay.
What's going on, guys?
All right, brother. We're just talking,
Don,
about forgiveness.
Man, I was just listening to, you know, the conversation, man. Of course, you know, with the whole Will Smith thing, you know, it you know, I already kind of gave you my two cents last week on it, but, you know, right now I'm just kind of, you know, okay, right now you're looking at the whole consequences of what happened.
Right.
Everyone's talking about, well, what should he do to his Oscar, or and then he resigned from the committee or something he did. I don't know the whole story on that. And now, you know, Jada just chimed in and said, she's not looking to be saved or something to that effect, that he was wrong for slapping him. And here we go.
So we were talking about, you know, forgiveness and so Will, that situation just came up. When you hold stuff in, it causes you to, you know, when you're consumed, you're not able to focus properly. Your mind is all over the place. And so, I believe that he has so much on his plate when he just snapped. I'm not here to judge him. I don't judge any man.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I got my own issues, right? And God says, do not judge, lest you want to be judged. And so I refuse to judge people, And I love Will Smith as an actor and a musician, you know, entertainer. And I was very hurt by what I saw happen because I was afraid for him. I didn't know what happened to him. Like, he just snapped. And so, but you know, I wish him well. I wish his family well. And I hope
you know, it reminds me of the song that Smokey Robinson did. I love this song too, Tears of a Clown. When there's no one around,
mm-hmm.
You know, Will Smith is such a jovial guy cinematically. You know, he was always that guy, man, that brought so much heartfelt appreciation in his art. He was, you know, even to the point that a lot of rappers wanted to discredit him because he wasn't gangster enough.
The dude really showered
people with a lot of love. But it was the tears of a clown when there's no one around. And he alluded to that fact on stage. He says, you know, I get it. You know, I'm in the public eye and, you know, we could beat up with this stuff and I'm supposed to accept it. But sometimes it's not cool. And I take it in. And like Wardell said, you get consumed. And then in an instant you snap and then the world throws every good thing you've ever done. You know, one person said, I totally disagree. They said, oh, he sent black people back 50 years. I was like, why is this possible for the Emancipation Proclamation of black people? Because he blacked somebody at a moment of weakness. I don't get that. Like,
yeah,
really?
That's, yeah,
like,
well,
that's really taking it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what people do.
I mean, you know, some people said, oh my God, this was staged. I said, I just have one question at this stage. What did this brother have to gain by besmearing his name, his affiliation, his honors? Like, are you serious? Like, really? And most people kind of backed off. Like, what did he gain? Nothing. He lost a lot. I don't see
that's the whole point right there, that, you know, no matter who you are, where you are, and what you do, if you don't, you know, if you can't get your feelings in order, it can cause you to stumble, and that's what happened to Will. His feelings were just not in order. He was consumed by, you know, a lot of things, and that can happen to anyone at any time.
It's a human element.
Yeah,
it's a human element.
Exactly.
And you know, I am not, like you said, I'm not in the point to judge. Okay, you say he was wrong for what he did, and right now I want to just kind of take it back to what Phoenix said, you know, about people talking about, you know, putting the race back and all of that stuff. I said, number one, I try not to jump on people who kind of have these feelings, because they think that, you know, what those two black men did is representative of all black people. And I just think that's a kind of a compartmentalized mentality to have, because, you know, over what was done to us mentally over the years. Now, granted, you know, no one has dominion over me or anything, but there's those little mindsets we have. It's like, oh, we're doing this in front of white people and this and this and this. No, those are two men just happen to be black men who had, one man had a breaking point, which we all go through, and it just so happened on a mainstream setting. Now, again, we can have these arguments about, you know, oh, he did it in front of the Oscars, he did it in front of this, he shouldn't have did this, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, I don't look for a certain validation of people who are going to see me as less than anyway. I don't look for their validation.
Right, right.
So we got to get out of that mentality to say, you know, that they're representative of all black men. It's just like when people have these arguments about, well, what about black people in Chicago? I've heard all that. Stop it. You know, because I'm in Arkansas. I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas. Do you think I represent the black people in Chicago, Illinois? Stop it.
And you know what's interesting?
Again.
You know what's interesting, Don? I mean, just to bring it back into a generic focus. I thought one of the positive.
Yeah,
one of the
I took
positive
away the from that, didn't I?
Yeah. One of the positive things that it came about. No violence is validated to a good thing. I don't care who you are. You could be green. You could be Hulk. It's wrong. It's wrong to take your feelings and decide you have the right to violate somebody physically, whether that's men to men to women, because a lot, you know what, there's a lot of men that get abused by women get beat up. We don't talk about it much, but violence,
oh yeah,
that begins
taboo.
Violence is wrong. And I like that because, you know, I think life offers us teaching moments. Once we get away from race, culture, color, and creed, is this right or is this wrong? It's wrong. Now, he may have had his reasons, and I love the way Wardell put it, we're not judges of men. You know, we're not. So that's something that
right.
higher powers have got to discuss, or even within the courtroom setting, you know, which is not necessarily based on your feelings. It's based on evidence.
That's true.
So we're not
so
in
true.
Control of those things. So, you know, it's good to walk away and say, you know, we're talking again to bring it back into focus about forgiveness. What's the benefits? We've been talking about some of the good benefits. I think I'd like to bring Wardell back on it because when I mentioned it to Wardell mentioned something that I wasn't focused on at that particular time, and he talked about some of the downsides of forgiveness. You remember, Wardell? And some
yes.
of the cautionary or precautionary points that one should take when you find yourself in a bad situation. You want to expound upon that, Wardell?
Well, just say it again. I'm sorry, I'm just a little off.
You know, we've been talking about forgiveness, and we've been talking about the many good things that we should do in terms of forgiving. But it was interesting how you mentioned that we have to have a precautionary concept when we forgive and then forget because
we might find
ourselves in a similar situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so
and
forgive.
Then if we totally forgive and forget, was it a teaching moment or
right.
did we lose the point?
Right, so a lot of times...
Remember that?
People, yeah, when people say forgive and forget, the forgetting part... to me is a part that I don't agree with completely. I understand what you mean by that. Uh-oh, okay, I think we just lost Don. But I understand what you mean by that, but the forgetting part, the part that I don't want to forget because I want to remember, I need to use that as a teaching tool for myself that I experienced this. So when it comes again, if that type of thing comes to me again, I can use that as a defense mechanism for myself so I don't have to go through that again. But if I forget it, then I'm kind of setting myself up for it. Well, you didn't really learn from the last time. So it's not to say I'm not going to forget like I'm trying to punish you. I'm just going to remember to protect me so that I don't have to go through that again. That's what I was...
I get that. And it made me think, I mean, and then, of course, being a spiritual man, I vacillate always towards the grand instructor. And he talks about forgiving and forgetting and not keeping an account of the injury and trying to understand in my own imperfect way the benefits. And in my own personal inference, I've never been a grudge holder. I have a sibling who's definitely considered, she's defined by being a grudge holder. And what do we mean by that? Someone who holds something in and they will tell you for the next 50 years what you did at the dinner table when you were 5 years old, like pour too much ketchup or steak sauce on their steak and they just never forgot it. And then they constantly had to remind you. My sibling is that way. But for me, it was more in tune to what you said earlier about being consumed. You know, I was never thin-skinned, but I became consumed with somebody did me wrong song. You know, somebody has always done me wrong song. Mm-hmm. And I had to let it go. And I had to mature past the point where I allowed these things to consume my thoughts
my actions, my deeds, where, you know, I looked at certain family members. You know, my grandmother was raised on the reservation. And she always says this to me. I mean, it's funny how those things come back 30, 40 years later. She said, you know, the first 7 years is the faith that God gave you. And she said, son, the rest is the faith that you earn. And yes. So she would say, so if you talk out the side of your mouth will be twisted. If you're the kind of person that's always frowning, you got that deep crease between your eyes. If you're a person that's always laughing, you have what's called laugh lines or smile lines and such. And as I look back retrospectively within my age group, I'm moving on to my 64th year, I have fared well. Some people think I'm in my 40s. Reason being is that I've learned to let it go so the pain doesn't show on my face. And I think it's a teaching point for us in the sense where, you know, today people are consumed with Botox and they're consumed with looking good and, you know, the IG look and the whole nine. But sometimes it's the environment, it's the mental stress, the contortions that you put yourself through because you're carrying this emotional baggage. Let it go. How many songs?
Let it go.
Let it go. Let it go.
And a Disney song.
You know, just let it go. You know, move on. Be the better person. I think, you know, I don't want to pop on the Will thing, but I just want to touch briefly on the other comedian that was the recipient of this violent act. And I've never been a fan of Mr. Rock. I've never been. I always kind of thought he was kind of on the corny side, actually. But he gained 50 cool points in my book. Why? Because I think he handled it masterfully. I learned from his teaching point. I said, wow, that's the way to handle somebody hitting you in the face on public television.
I mean,
this
that
guy
was he was full of class.
Consummate professional.
Full of class.
Man.
Full of class.
Ooh, he was so classy. And then he turned around and said, you know what? Let me process it. And then he said, you know what? He apologized. So to me, he's in Webster's Dictionary in my mindset now as the better man, the higher road. What a teaching point.
Yeah,
that's something that we could all take away and say, you know what? He handled that pretty good. I don't know if I could have done it that well.
So this is the thing. I mean, we're not going to get caught up in between their story and stuff, but I love that, and I'm so proud of how he handled it. And I'm so proud that Will came back and said, you know, I screwed up. I really screwed up. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I apologize. Here, take this. I'll get out of here. I don't want to do this. You know, it just says to me what they're saying and what they're doing is stepping up to the plate, not running and blaming him and blame. They're not even pointing fingers at each other. What they're doing is saying, I'm sorry. Will put him in that position by hitting him, but also it was like Jada felt like that Chris put Will in that place by saying that stuff about him, her. The problem is that everybody is not listening to your story. So everyone don't know your story to that degree about how sick everyone is. And so we're not going to get caught up in all this stuff because we can go on and on and on and on and on, and everybody has their point of view. But my feeling is that I'm blessed because I know that they're going to be okay at the end of the day. And this is a lot of times people and family can get in the way of the healing process because of their own opinions, you know? And so I don't want to get in the way with my opinion. My opinion doesn't matter. As long as they're okay, I'm cool. And it's the same thing in relationships. That's why you don't go and talk to your family sometime about the problem that you and your mate are having, because they, even though you've forgiven your mate, they're still holding a grudge against them, you see? And they're getting in the way with their feelings, and they weren't even the one that was hurt. So it's a strange thing, but it's something that happens all the time. Listen, it's Throwback Thursday. We're going to take a small music break, and we'll be right back with Phoenix and maybe Don Fleming. He's on the road, so depending on his reception. All right, we'll be right back. Throwback Thursday. Take me on.
Listen to the man. 'cause my love is in the hiding. Space or time. I love you for my life. You're a friend of mine. And when my life is over, remember we were together. We were alone and I was singing. I was singing this song to you. We were alone and I was singing this song.
Donnie Hathaway, right there. What a beautiful, beautiful
song.
For
all songs, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that is just powerful. You know that song.
Listen, it's funny. I know you had a lot to do with the Whispers and some of their successes, but I know that the Whispers were huge fans of Donnie Hathaway.
Absolutely.
In fact, they dedicated the song called A Song for Donnie,
right,
which was a hit that he had that they did over.
Right, right.
Donnie Hathaway had one of those voices, man. I mean, you talk about A Tears of a Clown, where he obviously, from his tragic ending, he withheld so many feelings inside of him. And sometimes, you know, as a singer and considered to be a singer, I'm not a fictional writer, you know. I write from my heart. And when you hear that song, there's no way that's not coming from his soul, you know. You can't fake that. You can't fake Jax with that. That's real.
Mm.
He was singing from his heart. Sam Cooke did it after the death of his son, you know, and he decided that he wanted to write a song that would be memorable for all time, and he never got a chance to hear the success. You know the song I'm talking about, I'm trying to formulate it in my mind as I'm thinking about it. Time's come, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And we all strive in our art form to reach that platform where we express our feelings without boundary. And that's just one of those songs, man. I mean, that's, you know, as it was playing, I was just shaking my head. Just, wow. What was that brother going through, man, to sing, to emote that kind of feeling? I mean, as a producer, I've worked with singers, and I try to get them to emote a feeling. That dude was so connected with it, man, that it was almost biblical. That song was like the psalmist.
He was really pouring his heart out, man. Yes.
What a great thing to be able to lead people with that kind of art. Amazing.
Well, we got about 10 minutes left in this segment of the show and stuff. And I wanted to just say thanks to Greg for referring that song to us. Really appreciate that. And also wanted to just update you guys. Astrid is doing much better now. She was really down, beat up with COVID over in Amsterdam. And she's finally out the bed and moving around. So I'm grateful for her. I thought something was really wrong. I was like, and something really was wrong, you know, and I just had to call her like, what is going on? And so, but I'm just grateful that she's good. I'm just praying that, you know, any of my brothers and sisters around the world, that if, you know, if you're going through something like what we were talking about in regards to having a difficult time in forgiving people, and I know it can be hard, especially if, you know, it's something like, you know, child molestation or something like that. That carries a whole, that's a whole nother league. And I'm not a psychologist. I can't even get into how you deal with that. But I can say, you know, for, you know, other things like, you know, being angry about somebody taking advantage of you, you know, stealing your money or, you know, lying to you or people, you know, just the simple things that we sometimes are like, I get very frustrated about money that was belonged to me and my friend took it and never said I was sorry and didn't try to fix it and never paid me back. I mean, just took it. It was my money. It was something I worked for, my royalties, and it was just gone, you know? And I had a hard time with that for a long time. And then finally I decided to let go and let God. And I got to enjoy that person again without having that over my head, because I was crying over spilt milk, right? And so, and God blessed me in other ways. And so I'm just like, you know what? Hey, that's the, you know, it's all good. I got paid this way, so I'm good. And so, but anyway, it was best for me to do that because now it's not even just about having that relationship back with that person, but it's also about me not having that, carrying that in my head anymore. You know, I'm not consumed with it. I always will want to know why, or can you fix that, or can you do something, but I'm not worried about it anymore. It's not a weight on me anymore. So if you can just learn to forgive people and just move forward with your life so you can do what your purpose is and not get consumed and lost and dragged around by it, you know, do that. It is the best thing that you can do for yourself. Because in life, we're going to run into these storms. They're going to happen. And the best thing you can do is just try to be prepared for it so that you can get through it, you know, and be okay on the other side of it. So anyway, what are your thoughts, man? Any closing thoughts before we move on here?
I mean, my sentiments exactly, just to underscore the thought, is that life offers us teaching or teachable moments. And we're not here to judge someone else. You know, even as ministers, we're here to heal or be a helpful word. And what's interesting is you never know, my dad said, you never knew a man unless you walked a mile in his shoes. You don't know what those people's burdens are. The only thing we can do is have healing words that heal, that are helpful, spoken at the right moment, or like silver carvings. And we have to learn to let go. It's such a beauteous thing to let go, you know, to be the bigger man, so to speak. We've had a couple of examples recently in the news about being a bigger man. Forget about the situation. Forget about the race and the color and the creed. Look at the teachable moment. Look at what can I take away? What can I extrapolate from their experience that I could be a better person or work at becoming a better person so that I can be a good example to other people? We're all put on this earth. It's almost like we're all thrown in the wash. You know, we're not color coordinated. Nobody's separating. You know, there used to be a detergent, all temperature. And I used to love that because that's how I do laundry. I throw it all in there. And I put, you know, some detergent in, and I walk away and I come back and my clothes are clean. I don't separate. I don't deviate. I don't judge. You know, I don't become a judger of men. I look at the teachable moment and I say to myself, wow, what do I learn from that? I probably wouldn't have handled it that way. But now I know if I do, I think I'm going to take that path that he took. I'm going to be a better man about it. So, yes, it's all about a teachable moment. It's all about being good people. It's all about being a good friend to the next man, even to our marriage mates. We don't think of it like that. But are you a good friend? Are you a good friend? Are you somebody that when the chips fall, somebody could come to you and you're not one of those, I told you so. You're like, hey, sit down. Hey, can I get you a coffee? Let me hear what your situation is. And be there to give that person the emotional hug that they need, as opposed to the person, oh, no, I'm not going to call Phoenix. He's going to beat me up. We don't want to be that person. So let us take these teachable moments. Let us take this show. I think it's a blessing. I always say, Wardell, I think this show is such a blessing because in a world that is so caught up sometimes in non-essential things, I think this is a very essential radio show that really highlights we try not to get into too controversial subjects. We're not here to talk about race, color, creed. We're here as men who have experienced things because of the path we've chosen as musicians, which opens us up to a labyrinth of experiences and understandings. And if there's some small teachable point that we could share, like Wardell said, we're not psychologists, we're just Renaissance men that have experienced probably more than we should have experienced. But yet, we came out on the other side smiling. And so it's a testament to all men, whether you're married, not married, looking for a mate, just a friend, religious, not religious, spiritual, or thinking about it, it's okay. As long as you're on a path to being a better person, it's such a great start. Let us all strive to be better people, better friends, better husbands, better daughters, better sons, because in the end of the day, we're a composite or a sum total of the bigger picture, even though we're just an individual.
Amen. There you go, my brother. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, and we appreciate you, and look forward to next Tuesday with the young lady that we're going to be chopping it up with, and thank you for all you do, Phoenix. We appreciate it. What's her name again?
She goes by the name of Dia, but she's going to, you know, tell you she has, as we all do, different aliases, and we'll spend a portion of talking about that. But Dia, as for now, and okay. She'll get into her story and talk about a teachable moment, bro. She's going to bring it, so we look forward.
Sounds good. All right. Well, be blessed. All right. And enjoy the rest of your Throwback Thursday, Phoenix. And guys, all right, man. God bless you. And we'll talk to you soon. Here we go. Let's keep this ball going on Solar Records Radio. love that song so much. I've always loved that song as a young man. And I am so blessed because right now we have one of the singers from the group, the Silvers. What's up, Charmaine Silvers?
Hello, hello.
I sound so excited, don't I? You know, I am. It's always a pleasure talking to you. You're such a beautiful spirit. And
thank you.
Yeah, you know, God made you that way, and we get to enjoy that part of you. And so thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us today. We've been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks now. So here you are, finally, you got to hear. Oh, my God. What are your thoughts about that song when you hear that high school dance song? What are your thoughts?
One of my favorites. It is. My favorite line in that song is, when we turn the lights down. I love that.
Why do you think you love that part so much?
I don't know. I think it's the down.
and it has
so much feeling.
Right. Yeah. And so listen, there's so much to talk about, and I know you're going to tell us the story inside the story. There's some amazing stories that happened in your life with your family. Man, with your family, that is so cool. And but just, you know, I mean, just the reiteration of, you know, being on this, you guys performed this song how many times? I mean, the energy on that song, and I mean, I can't imagine. It just seems like the song, like we got to do this right now. And so, when you recorded in the studio, was it just as much fun for you guys, or was it like, okay, this is the serious part? Or was it on the stage, like, we really got to be serious here? I mean, because Leon has always been intense to me, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, how was that for you guys, working in the studio versus on stage?
It was always fun.
Really?
Working in the studio, yeah, because we were young, so we played a lot. We had to make ourselves knuckle down and be serious when it was time to be serious. And, so we always have fun in the studio. It was never – now, fun fact, well, it wasn't much fun for me, but I always had a cold whenever I did.
That's weird.
Every single album, if you really listen closely – it sounds like I'm singing, like, you know, like
nasal. But you know, even if I wanted to really listen closely, you know, I would not be able to hear that, because you guys sound, your harmonies are like, they're like angels. You guys sound like little angels, and that was actually the name of your group, right, when you started.
When we were little, yeah, wow. Freddie Perren showed us something that was amazing. We were singing, I don't remember which song it was, but we were singing something, and Freddie Perren, he recorded it, and he asked us to come in to the booth. And so we did. We thought we did something wrong. And he started playing the song, and he said, now look at the meters, because he purposely mic'd us separately so he could do this test. And he said, and we were like, yeah. I mean, it didn't mean anything to us. And he said, look at your meter. He said, I didn't adjust anything. Your volume, you guys corrected on your own, and the meters looked identical for every single one of us. And I thought, he was a Christian, and he told us that means you are definitely anointed. That's the God voice. And I thought that was really special. I did. I thought it was special.
That's wow. That's wow. So,
yeah.
I mean, man, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So how old were you guys? Well, I shouldn't say you guys, because it's all different ages. How old were you when you guys first went into the studio and started recording?
I was, let's see, was I 14 or 15? No, I had to have been 13. No, I was 14. because it happened pretty fast. We went into the studio and we started recording. First we went to MGM. They liked us. They hooked us up with a manager the next week. He got us in Vegas, which was just a few months later. And we were in the studio in between all of that. And it happened pretty darn fast. Very fast. It was so fast that I think in the beginning it scared some of the members of the family. It definitely scared my mom.
Mm-hmm. She's like, whoa, wait a minute. This is my baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but all your life, right, you guys knew something was happening because before you even got, presented to these companies, you guys were singing already. You guys were doing this thing. So,
I
mean, I guess you're so young, you're like thinking, okay, we're just having fun at the house.
Basically what happened is we were living in the Nickerson Gardens projects, and they were having budget cuts in the school district in our area, and they canceled the security guards. I'll never forget our security guard named Mr. Tech. He was the main one. I loved Mr. Tech. He was so on it. The school was always in order. No, but there were no fighting. And when they cut the budget and cut the security guards, kids started bringing drugs. They started bringing guns. It was getting pretty rough. And since we were all fighters, because we were a big family, you mess with one, you mess with all.
Right.
We decided, we better, because we knew we could sing. We said, we better find a company, start singing so we can get out of the projects, because it was getting rough. We knew it was going to get rough. So that's what we did. Leon has started writing songs. That's what we did.
Okay. Wow.
It was like an avalanche from the time we made the decision collectively. Then it was like the, my analogy is the bullet train. You jump on the bullet train and it's going.
We have been out of here. Got to go. But listen, this even goes back even further. Because your parents started out. Your mom went to college where your mom and dad met, and your mom was in college for music, right?
Yes, she was. She was an opera singer. Very, very, very good opera singer. I can't even describe to you how good she is. This is how good she was. She sang at Leon's first wife, who naturally they were divorced. She was getting remarried. And so she was singing at the wedding, and she was singing Ave Maria. Leon walked in right when mommy was singing, and he came to me. He said, "That's a great recording." I said, "That's not a recording. That's your mom." He looked up at the front, and it looked like his mouth was going to drop.
Because the intonation was on. That's what it probably was. Oh, he's like, wow, that is
perfect.
Great. Perfect pitch. Wow.
Perfect.
Man, that's so good. And your dad was going to school to be a doctor, but he was pushing the music thing. How did that happen? Did mom, get him to do, how did he just jump into the music thing?
Because he was born with the ear. He didn't have the fantastic voice like my mom, but what a ear he had. And he sat us down and started teaching us harmony. Back then, the songs on the radio were like Frank Sinatra songs and songs like Blue Moon. There are a bunch of songs, but if you listen to those, the harmony is very intricate. And we started singing with him when we were like ages 3, 4, 5, and 6. He heard us. We used to turn our mattresses over, and if you hit the box spring, the old wooden box spring, it sounded like drums. So we used to drum on the box springs, and we used to sing, I'll never forget, one of my favorite songs when we were little kids. was Laura Scudder's at a potato chip commercial with Harmony. And it was like, Laura Scudder's big brand potato chips. Best potato chips in the world. And we did like four-part harmony as little kids. And our dad heard us. And that's when he started working on it. And I, for us, it wasn't any big deal because we were doing it in the bedroom all the time. But for him, it must have been a shock because we were toddlers. And so he was mesmerized. It, I think it started the rocky bumpiness in their marriage because he seemed to get more interested in us singing than his own career, you know?
Oh, boy.
He
realized that, hey, something special happening with these kids.
He did.
So, but anyway, and so as far when you said he had that air, right, that special gift, I understand that James had that special gift as well.
Jonathan.
Hearing harmony. Because Leon is saying, like, this little kid, how does he remember my part?
He did.
Can you tell us any stories about James and his air?
Whenever we would, for instance, when Leon would write songs, he would usually come and we'd all sit down and he played the bass. And he'd have his melody worked out, even sometimes before he had lyrics. And we would all sit down and we would start singing parts. And sometimes we would just come up with the parts on our own. It was like we were inspired. And there were six of us because Ricky would sit down too. And it's not that common to come up with a fifth or a sixth part when you're doing harmony. And whenever there was that addition that would just make you go, ooh, that was Jonathan. Jonathan would come up with a part. We'd all do. I usually had the high notes. Olan was kind of in the middle, and then everyone else would fill in. And Jonathan would just throw in a part that just nobody else heard but him. And once he would come up with it, it was so awesome. It was really awesome. Olan occasionally would do that too.
Really?
Yeah, we were practicing a take six song. He Never Sleeps. And I don't know if you know that song. It's harder than some of the stuff we ever did.
Wow.
And while we were practicing, Olan came up with this part that even the Take Six guys didn't have. And that, God.
That is so cool. What drives me crazy about you guys is harmonies. Yeah, I've never heard anyone do harmonies like you guys did. I didn't just hear it. I didn't just hear it like as a whole, like everybody's doing, or like you hear it on the record, you hear all the harmonies. I heard it individually broken down and built up.
Mm.
That was a real eye-opener for me, and it really shocked me. It showed me that I know nothing about music like I think I do. When I saw you guys in the studio and you were singing the harmonies, and guys, I'm telling you, I am not making this up. And to the listeners, listen, this is real. These guys would start off in one place in this, or with their notes, like your part is like maybe down here in the unison part, and all of a sudden you end up way up in, I mean, how do you move from, you know, from doing a, from, I shouldn't say unison, but I mean like a, you may be you got the baritone parts and you got the, you know, the different harmony parts and stuff. But if you start down there and you end up in a soprano or first soprano or second soprano, how is that?
Yeah.
How does that not interfere with the other kids that are singing? Other singers that are singing, How does that not interfere and cause you guys to crash and burn? I don't understand
because
that.
Because that's the ear. That's the ear. You have to have an ear for it. My daughter, my middle daughter, Tina, she has that ear. And she used to try to sing some of the songs that she heard us singing, especially Because by the Beatles. We used to sing that one. And she tried to get some of her friends who were in the music class to sing the parts. And the minute a second person would start singing, their voice would travel to the other person's part. They couldn't stay on their own part.
Right, right.
And she said she didn't know that not everybody could sing harmony. And we didn't know it either because we had been doing it since we were little kids. But then as we got older, we realized you have to have the ear. That's where the ear comes in because you have to be able to hear your part, hear everybody else's part. And then in our case, sometimes we had a fifth and a sixth part, which is that's when you start getting into music theory because most people – they only sing four-part harmony, three or four at the most. And, it was actually a conundrum for us, too, because being born with it, you don't realize that it's a gift,
wow.
You know, unless someone outside points it out to you.
Yeah, like me. I'm telling you, that was ridiculous. I've never seen anything like that before. I mean, it was like I was, when you say, I say seen because I was there watching them and they were just going from, you know, one place to another and they're crossing each other and going from soprano down to alto. I'm like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Why didn't you, like, crash, you know, have an accident somewhere? Why did somebody say, hold on, you got to hold on to your note. Stay on your own note. I don't understand why that did not happen. It just drives me crazy. And it was, like, it was so smooth and so beautiful. And at the when you realized you had that gift, that you were born with that ear, did it make you feel, like, Or was it just like, well, the whole family has a gift, so it is normal? I mean, did it make you feel different?
It did. I appreciated it. Now, you know, Patrice Rushen, she went on the road with us for a while, and she pointed out to me something that I never even noticed. She said, you know, you have perfect pitch. And I didn't know. And I was like, I guess so, yeah. I really didn't know what she was talking about. And she pointed it out. She said, you guys always start the song yesterday before the band starts playing, and they don't give me a note because I was the one that started out yesterday.
Oh,
and that was a cappella. And then the band, but she said, since you always pick the perfect key, the band can just come right in. Because they came in halfway through the song. And I thought about that later, and I was like, oh, I never noticed that.
Can I get a little extra money for that?
It takes a pro to point it out.
yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That is so good. So why don't you just, I mean, I know I just like hit you with so much stuff. And then I have questions from overseas too that are coming in. And so I want you to just tell us what you want to tell us about your time with your family growing up in this amazing group.
Well, the thing that I'm the most proud of is our first album with Capitol Records, the Boogie Fever album, the costumes, I made them, and it took me 48 hours, and I had a $100 budget.
That's it.
And I made everything from top to bottom because we went through some financial struggles. My mom was having a disagreement with our manager at the time. We were still kind of young, so we didn't understand it.
Right.
So that meant everything was frozen, even our money. So what I did is I got shoes that the guys could dance in. I glittered them. I glittered my shoes, Alain's shoes, and Angie Pat, actually everybody, because it was all nine of us at the time. And I made the clothes for everybody. I didn't have time to finish because they sprung it on us. They said, Capitol Records wants to do this shoot on this day. And that was actually 2 days from the time. No, it was 3 days from, and we had nothing. I mean, seriously, nothing. And so I thought, okay, fine. Because I was a seamstress, and a lot of people didn't know that. I've been sewing since I was in seventh grade. You know, they have homemaker classes and that kind of thing in school. So I chose sewing. So I was a seamstress. And so that's what I did. I went downtown. I got bolts of fabric. I matched everything up. I got the trim. And I just went to work. And they actually told me at Capitol they thought that was the best photo shoot that they had seen out of all of the Silver's pictures. And I kind of agreed. I felt so proud of myself. I was like, I did that. Nobody knew. It came out really, really good. Yeah, I liked it.
But how old were you? Mm-hmm. How old were you around?
I was 20 then. Yeah, because I was pregnant with Timmy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, okay. So, man, oh, man, what a challenge. And you know, I mean, that's a great, just watching, you know, you guys in all your uniforms. I want you to know that Leon stole some of your ideas because with Dynasty, yes, I was wondering with this glitter stuff, because he put the glitter on the boots. And I was like,
the V-neck. That was my idea because they were all kind of tall and lanky, and so what that did is it gave them, just seeing a little bit of skin, just broadened their shoulders and their whole look, you know. So mm-hmm. they just didn't appear so thin.
So what? Now, you guys been on the road with, like, you guys on the road with Tom Jones, and you guys on the road with so many stars. But you guys were you guys more pop as opposed to R&B?
In the beginning, we were more eclectic, if you think about it, because Paradise and the other things we were doing in the very beginning, mm-hmm. they weren't like anything that was out. And we were serious about doing our own thing in the beginning. And then that lasted until Capitol Records. And then they wanted us to Boogie Fever was the hit that they picked, but everything that they wanted us to do was more pop. And I remember there were some disagreements at first because it was a big change and we weren't used to that. And it just didn't fit us until, you know, we sat down, Larkin Arnold talked with us and, you know, everybody discussed it. Freddie Perren did. And they let us realize, they brought to our attention that disco had just come out, and this was going to give us the push that we needed to get to the next level. And they were right, because Boogie Fever was Capitol Records' biggest single for years.
Wow.
I remember they had this platinum record in the lobby, you know, and then naturally things have happened on the internet and lots of other people blew that out of the water because of technology. But, they were right. It brought us to the next level.
Wow. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about Fool's Paradise because of one of the listeners. They have a question about that. But I want you to hear your mom and dad's voice a little bit real quick here. All right? Just listen.
Okay.
And you get your hat and coat and go out. That's a good one. What was that, the last part of it? Do it well and not at all.
Yes.
I must remember that. I'm going to try it on my cook. Let's see now. If a task is once begun, how does the rest of it go?
Never leave it till it's done.
I'll try it tomorrow morning. First thing she'll do is hit me over the head with a coffee pot. Charlie, did you ever do anything with the musical training that you received in college? Do you still sing?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, our whole family sings, and we get
like,
quite a kick out of it.
You mean it's like the Trapp family? You mean?
Yes, Leon has taught the kids four-part harmony.
Really? Huh? Mm-hmm. Is this true? You taught all the youngsters to sing harmony?
Yes, Groucho. I was surprised at the speed at which they caught on, and
we found
a unity in singing together.
Oh, that's lovely. What kind of songs do you sing? Rock and roll, spirituals, classics, or what?
Well, we sing all type music. However, we have more fun singing our originals.
You write these yourself?
Yes. I've written quite a few.
Spare time, huh? Well, I'd like to hear you sing one of these original songs. Could you do it now?
Well, just by chance, I brought the whole family along.
Really? Take Shorty here. Come over here, Shorty. He's pretty sleepy. Yeah. Now, you sit right here and behave yourself, remember. This is the only suit I've got. Now, then, could you name these for me and the ages? Let's start with Shorty here, huh?
Yes, he's one.
He's one. Yeah, I know he's one. I know he isn't twins, but what's his name?
This is Joseph Pritchett. He's 1 year old. And this is Edmund. He's 3 years old. This is Jonathan. He's 4 years old. And Charmaine is 5. Leon III is 6. And Olympia is 7.
Oh, lovely family. There seems to be a year missing there. What happened to 2? Shirley, if a task is once begun...
Well, we'd like to do the gopher cha-cha for you.
The gopher cha-cha. Do you need help from the orchestra?
Well, no. I just accompany them on the concert.
You wouldn't get much help from this orchestra, anyhow.
Well, this is a little song that is a play on the word gopher. It's about a little girl.
You mean you go for me and I go for you?
Not quite. It's a little girl who has to go for coffee and go for papers and go for this and that for father and mother around the house.
I see. And you wrote this yourself? Huh?
Yes, I wrote it.
And what inspired you to write this? You always had the kids running to the store?
Yes.
Oh. Well, tear loose and let's have it, huh? And you too. I want to hear some singing out of you, old boy.
No, boy.
Boy, huh?
La. La, 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 la. La, la.
La, la.
Before I get on me merry way, I hear me
Oh my God, you were only five.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, my eyes are full of water. I tear up because I know you guys as grown folks, right? And they're here to be able to experience this with you is just it's just such a beautiful experience. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
It's funny. I remember it. I loved Groucho Marx. I thought he was hilarious. That whole experience was fun.
Yeah. And now your dad, do you remember that saying? Because your dad was full of sayings. Man, oh, man. At the office, he had all kinds of sayings. And so do you remember
he
that saying?
Was. He used to give us lectures. And especially before, because back then they would spank you. I mean, nowadays you're not supposed to. But
mm-hmm.
before he was going to give us a spanking, because we were a handful. We were busybodies.
Busy.
And before he would come in and give us a spanking, he'd have this grin on his face, which I find really sadistic. But he did. <Uh-oh. laughs> He would have a little grin. And he'd have to give us his lecture first, like 5, 10, 15-minute lecture. And then he would proceed to spank us. But he always has something to say. Always.
Oh, man.
He was something else.
Yes, I miss your dad. He was really a nice man. I enjoyed him being around him. Now, so we have a listener from the UK, and the question is, let me see which one. I got so many. Looking back, do you think that the song Fool's Paradise was groundbreaking and ahead of its time?
Yes, I do. Yeah, because Leon wrote that in a class. Mr. Simon was our teacher, and he was truly a revolutionary type teacher. He told us to put the books away. He put a rug on his desk, cleared his desk, and he sat in lotus position on his desk. He would teach us the things that should have been in the history books but were not. And that whole class inspired Leon to write Fool's Paradise. It was something.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. My friend said, I had to post that. He's posting away your stuff here. What about yesterday? There was something about yesterday. I heard a question about yesterday. But what are your thoughts about, you know, just that song? That was a Beatles song, right?
Yes, it was a Beatles. And that was a George Wilkin arrangement. He arranged Broadway, and he was very, very accomplished. And he said he did that. He came up with that arrangement but couldn't find anyone to sing it the way it should have been sung. Mm-hmm. And so he presented it to us. And I remember when we first did it, we first did all the parts, he was like in tears. He was so happy with the way it came out. He loved it.
Look,
yeah.
Okay. Well, the question about that song was why do you, I know it has something to do with it was done as an acapella as opposed to with music. Do you know why that was? Was that the version that he wrote with no music at all? Just vocals.
Yep. Just vocals, and he didn't know anyone that could sing harmony, especially a cappella, the way we did, which is why he decided to bring that arrangement to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
The listeners said that was very brave because, yeah, I mean, you guys really put yourselves out there like that. You know, doing a ballad, it really tells everything. And then to have a ballad with no music?
Yeah.
That is really like, okay, we're laying it on the line. We're telling you guys we can sing. We can sing. Wow. So,
yeah.
You know, tell us something about, you know, some of the most memorable times on stage that you had on the road. Is there anything in particular? And I they're asking about Edmund as well. So it's however you can mix that in with that. And I know some
one
of
the most one of the most memorable times for me was when we went back and forth to New York a lot, especially the Apollo Theater, and we were there in the very beginning when we were toddlers with Ray Charles, and then we went again as the Silvers. And every time we went back, it's like the audience evolved quicker than we did, because one time we went back and we were like, yeah, this is we knew the Apollo, we knew how it was going to be. But when they opened the curtains, because it was like old theater with curtains and everything, the audience had instruments in the first two rows, and they were ready to jam.
What?
I mean,
that's weird.
Oh, it was a shot. They were partying harder than we were. We had to make sure we caught up with them.
What?
It was awesome.
Wow.
Yep, and they had conga drums. They had regular drums. They had... I mean, they had like full-blown instruments all in the first two rows. It was something. It was wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And Edmund, a fun fact about Edmund, a lot of people don't know, Edmund could do voices.
What do you
mean? Like,
comedians?
Well, you know how comedian Eddie Murphy can imitate people? And
do
voices. Same
for
Jamie Foxx, can imitate people.
Oh, yeah.
That was Edmund's gift. Nobody knew. It was his silent gift. But he could do anybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing.
You see, man, some of the things. I mean, I wish I would have been able to experience that. Can you do a voice for me, please? Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Did John Lennon or Paul McCartney and him ever say anything about that version of Yesterday to you guys?
No, but we met. It was Ringo. He was a friend of our manager, and there was this private theater where they used to go, and he was very nice. Oh, it was like a highlight for me. Because I was the biggest Beatle fan.
I thought you were going to say biggest drummers. You look like a fan of drummers. Never mind.
No, that was a drummer. And Edmund. Edmund was a drummer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it was wonderful watching him. That was very special. Yeah.
Wow. Man, oh, man, I tell you, I just want to say, you know, I want to play another one of you guys' songs real fast, and then I'll come right back after this and just get your thoughts after that. Right back.
Okay.
I've always loved you guys, the sound that you guys have. And I wanted to just ask you, did anybody else in the group produce besides Leon?
Edmund.
Oh, okay. So
Edmund produced. He produced Frida Payne and some other artists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was right in between.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It was in between when he left the Silvers to do solo. And in between, I guess off and on, he would produce a little bit.
Okay. All right. And so was Edmund the main singer, the lead singer, the main lead singer?
Yes.
And then now that this is, people are always asking about this, and it's almost kind of a thing. When Foster comes up, right, this little Foster comes up, and all of a sudden he's singing the song, and Edmund's like, wait a minute, I thought we were singing that song.
What happened is Edmund's grew, and, you know, boys, their voices get old, get lower.
Right.
And when we used to practice Misdemeanor, Edmund used to sing it, and then his voice got too low for it, and he had to toss it over to Foster, because Foster was still a little kid, so he could hit those high notes. I mean, he just overdid the high notes in Boogie Fever. I remember Freddie. One time he hit a note, and Freddie was like, "Ah, that's going too high. Bring it down. Bring it down."
Oh my God!
He definitely had what I call the squeaky voice when he was little. It was going very high.
That's great. Now, the girls, everybody was always wondering if the girls were going to do their own thing. Did you guys ever like just say, "Hey, we need to do something separately"?
We were going to do that, but what happened was with the Bizarre album, there was a song that just started jumping off the charts. It's the one, oh my gosh, I don't remember the name of it now. The one that me and Angie sang. Angie was pregnant, and she was supposed to do the whole lead, and she went into labor, so she couldn't finish the song, and I had to finish the lead. And it's funny, when you hear it, we both sound exactly the same, and there were a few accidental harmony parts that I threw in there, because Leon, he would do something when he was doing the lead vocals, is he would take all the background and extra voices out, and then he used to do his own little blend. But I was singing harmony parts that he hadn't thought of. So then when he put all the voices back together, it was like really something special. But the song, oh, man, do you remember the song that Angie and I sang? I don't remember it. Unwritten Letter. It's P.S., the Unwritten Letter. That was the song.
Okay.
That one started jumping off the charts.
Wow.
And it did, and they started playing it like crazy, and Solar had them squash it.
What?
And the DJs were like, what do you mean squash it? He said, this thing is going off the charts. But they told them to stop it. They did not want – they said that that's not the dynamic of the group, were the girls. And I was actually a little bit upset about that. I was like, the song is awesome.
I don't blame anybody. Wait a minute. So that was on which album? That was on
Bizarre.
That was on Bizarre. And that was on Solar? Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, was Bizarre on Solar?
No, I think
Concept.
Yeah.
Bizarre was Geffen.
So Geffen is the one that just told him, hey, hold on, that's not the right approach. Man, you know, people always got to just step in when they don't need to. Stay in your lane. because the DJs, so many times, they're out there. They're on the ground. They hear what – they know what people love, how they're responding to them. And so to tell them not to play that, Like, are you kidding? This is what everyone loves. And I've heard that many times.
And they
times.
Were getting requests. They were getting a lot of requests. They said people would hear it once, and then they started getting calls, and so they kept playing it.
Wow.
But yeah, P.S. is the song. It was. It's actually good. When I hear it now, it's like, yeah, that did turn out pretty darn good.
Man, well, you know, yeah. for anybody that just tuned in, we're talking to Charmaine Silvers from the Silvers, and Charmaine, we only have 6 minutes left, and I just want to just give you a chance to. You know, if there's anything you want to say to your fans, to the listeners, people that have been following you guys and supporting you for all these years, you have the floor to do that. But I want to say that we love you guys. And I've been in different groups where it's all about the Silvers, and so many people still love you guys to this day. And it must be, like, so crazy for you just growing up like that as a child star, up to an adult. That is just, I can't imagine what that must feel like, because all your life you've been in the limelight. And so, you know, I just want to say thank you so much for blessing us with, you know, all that you guys have done. And thanks for making the uniforms that we enjoyed watching your family in and all the stuff, you know, that you guys do and have done for us. So thank you so much. We love you and appreciate you.
And thank you for having me. It's been wonderful. I like sharing information, and I love the fact that there are still fans out there that want to hear the information. So, yes.
Let me ask you this. Are you writing a book?
I am.
Yeah.
I started on it 8 years ago, but then we had some family tragedies, and, you know, sometimes that can take the wind out of you. So it did. It took the wind out of me for quite a while, and so I'm starting to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the word retire, so I'm in the second half of my surprise life, and so I'm going through a lifetime change. Workout schedules, lots of self-help, communication and master classes that I'm doing now. So I will be able to figure out what I want to do for the second half of my life. So,
wow,
I am enjoying it.
Amen. Isn't it amazing to be able to see the gift? I mean, this is a gift that you guys got, and the seed just transfer from you to your child. Isn't that absolutely
amazing? Oh, it definitely
amazing?
Does.
It's like, this is really real.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I always hear people say, well, did the gift transfer? Did the gift? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Then, but, you know, and now, I mean, I really see it. I mean, especially when you talk about the sensitivity of the vocal thing, you know, having that
mm-hmm.
ear. To get, because that kind of ear that you guys have is not, that everybody don't get that. That is just very very special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a gift. I appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for it. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will try to, I would just want to say thank you. And you, when you get ready, do your book and stuff, please come back and share
okay.
it with us. Share it with us and stuff so we can support you and go get it and hear and read your story. We want to read it. Are you going to do an audiobook as well?
Okay. I don't know. I haven't done that far yet.
Okay. Well, audiobook
probably will be.
Yeah, that'd be fun. You could throw some harmonies.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks so much. We do appreciate you, and you take
okay.
care. All right, and I'm gonna
okay.
get that song with you and you and Pat. That was you and Pat
and Angie
and you, Pat
yes.
and Angie. Okay, it's called P.S.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds
okay.
good. All right.
All
God
right. bless
you.
God bless
take
everybody.
Care. All right. Hey, and everybody, okay. thank you so much for tuning in to Solar Records Radio. We ran out of time. God bless you. Thanks, Greg, for the flyer. Thanks, everyone. For just being a part, we appreciate you and love you guys. Take care. Have a good night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.